The following program was pre-recorded on WFAN. It's time for Hello, My Name is Craig, our weekly candid conversation about gambling addiction. Now, here's Craig Carton.
Good morning. Welcome to another edition of Hello, My Name is Craig. Craig Carton with you for the next 30 minutes, an honest, open, frank conversation about gambling addiction and recovery. Joining me, as always, is my main man, Mr. Dan Trelaro. Danny, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, Craig.
And out in Arizona today, we have Doug, who's a gambler in recovery as well. Doug, good morning. Thank you for your time today.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
How long has it been since your last wager?
May 27th was 2 years for me.
God bless you. Congratulations. You must feel like a different human being than you did 2 years ago.
I certainly do. It's an amazing feeling, actually, to be honest with you. I gambled for a long, long time.
When did your gambling begin? Even before it became problematic, how old were you?
I was 14, living in North Jersey, and my first gambling law, instead of like penny ante poker games, was horse racing. I used to go to the track with my father. He saw no problem with taking a 14-year-old with him to the track, and it was it was fun at the time. It were fun times.
Sure, and it's father-son bonding, and I'm sure as a 14-year-old, you know, the track is bigger than life, and you get to walk around the paddock area, and you see the horses. And I'm sure there's some memories you have of kind of noticing, you know, the various people at the track, and they all have a similar look, don't they?
They sure do. And it was exactly that. It was our bonding time, my father and I. It was the time we got along the best, because he was gambling, and I was gambling, and I loved everything about it. The smell of the track, the excitement of it all. I was wrapped up the first time I went there.
At 14, when you have your first track experience, and then obviously many more after that with and I'm sure without your dad, when you look back on your life with some clarity now, you got the bug right away, but when did you start gambling on a semi-regular basis on your own?
That would have been 17 or 18 when I could start getting to the track myself with my driver's license in New Jersey at 17, and I started going one or two particular friends, and then it went from there. I went to college in Delaware, so it became easy for me to get to Atlantic City, which I didn't do on an often basis, but it was enough that I knew I would go whenever I could. So I knew there was something wrong for sure. Like, I knew I went an inordinate amount of time.
You knew it in the moment, or you could say that looking back on it?
I knew it in the moment. I knew I had a problem, but I always thought, as most gamblers do, that I can control it, that I thought that I could... I was always going to be okay. You know, most gamblers think, you know, there's never a problem as long as you get even. Win money, get even.
When you look back on it, you're gambling as a teenager, 17, 18 now. You're going to the track. You're going to Atlantic City. When did gambling really become a problem in your life?
After college. I came home from college, graduated University of Delaware, came home, got into a business with a friend of mine of flipping houses, and this is a real simple way of it going real, real bad, real fast. And I knew my gambling was a problem. I was doing whatever I could to gamble. I worked menial jobs at first because I was just got out of college. And by the way, the last job I had, finishing my last semester of college, I worked at a racetrack. I worked at Delaware Park as a bartender. To me, it was the greatest job in the world. Because I had cash every day and access to horse racing every single day, and people were paying me to be there. So that did not help me. I would work at Delaware Park during the day, and then I would drive to Atlantic City at night to their racetrack. Then I really knew I was in trouble. That's when I knew I was doing it whenever I could. But when I got home from school, I got in some legal trouble because we were flipping some houses, and I used some money that wasn't mine. It was investor money. Gamble. It wasn't a significant amount of money. It was about $6,000 at the time. It was significant to me. But of course, I was just borrowing it. I was going to put it right back in the account. And I didn't. And the people that were involved with it pressed charges against me. And so that was the first time that I had serious consequences against me for gambling. And, you know, even then, you would think that that'd be a seminal moment. But all I thought to myself was, well, this is unlucky that I didn't get the money back in the account on time, and it's just a misunderstanding. The consequences became more frequent after that, and that began the spiral of my life that I wouldn't take responsibility for the bad things I was doing. And for the most reason, because I wanted to keep gambling. That's a simple answer. I left. I left North Jersey and moved to, of all places, Las Vegas.
Let me stop you there. Did you leave New Jersey because you were in trouble and you were avoiding the trouble?
I did. I admit that I did. I left because I didn't want to face the consequences. It was one of those deals where I was a pretty popular guy, and I didn't want my name dragged through, even though I. But when you're thinking at that point, you know, I came from a town in North Jersey where I was, you know, big man on campus, a football star, wrestling star, and I didn't want the publicity of having to go to court and all that stuff. But you know what? In the end, everybody found out anyway. So, you know, I was just being a very stupid kid. Right. And that action cost me a lifetime of suffering because I spent the next 35 years looking over my shoulder. So I never really took care of it.
Right.
But I moved to a place where, you know, in Vegas where everyone thinks you're fine, but, you know, I got into a different business and I kept my name out of the public venue all the time. I had a wife. I used her name on all my businesses and everything. It was just terrible. It was like such a terrible decision what I made at the time.
Yeah, because I would imagine mentally and emotionally, it's like having a second and third job because, look, if there's guys in Jersey that want to find you, Vegas ain't the right place to hide.
That's so true. And back then, it wasn't quite the same. I mean, these guys, you're talking about a little bit of money. That's what the shame of it all is.
Right.
You know, you're talking about $6,000, which could have been, my father could have handled it. But I didn't want to handle it. I didn't want to stop gambling. That's how strong the addiction is. I knew in order to even face it, one of the consequences would be to stop gambling. And I didn't want to do that. And that's the simple truth of it.
I'm just thinking about it. And what's really amazing, people need to understand, is that when you look back on your life now, a simple phone call or conversation with your dad or, you know, someone else, you could have solved this problem for very little amount of money in the big picture. Look, $6,000, you know, to a young guy, still $6,000. It's not, you know, necessarily chump change and not easy to come by for a lot of people for sure. But imagine how different life would be had you just owned up to it at the time and explained to someone who loved you and cared about you. It could have been a payment plan. It could have been lump sum. It could have been a lot of things that it wasn't. People need to understand that's how irrational your gambling addicts are. So we'll pick it up from there in just a moment. This is Hello, My Name is Craig.
Back to more of Hello, My Name is Craig on The Fan with your host, Craig Carton.
Welcome back to Hello, My Name is Craig. Interesting story here. Doug joins us from Arizona, but originally from the East Coast. And, of course, Dan Trillaro. We're going to gloss over a lot of your life story, but 30 years of gambling, obviously kind of avoiding the reality of owing people money on the East Coast, moving to Vegas, you know, getting married, starting a family and all that. Imagine along the way, there had to be a bottom of the barrel moment. There had to be your wife catching you in lies or finding out that the finances weren't right. If you don't mind sharing some of that with us, you know, I think the audience would appreciate that part of the story.
When you bring up the word lies, that's the word. And that's where I am in my life now as I've become the most honest person I can ever imagine being. Because I spent a good portion of 35 years just lying almost every day.
Yep.
All of it just to cover up my gambling. Where I was going, what I was doing, how much money was in the bank. I mean, I had an understanding wife, but more importantly, I had that personality that I could convince people of anything. And you know, I was that, you know, whatever I needed to have happen, I could make happen because I was that, you know, I was that guy, Doug,
yep.
Who would, you know, people looked at me differently. They, you know, I had quite a good past with people. They trusted me for no reason, just for because of who I was. And I used all that capital my whole life. And I went a long, long time lying my way through everything, looking over my back. And I decided 13 years ago I was going to fix this. And I came back from Vegas, came back to New Jersey, and I was going to fix my problems. But, you know, I thought I was committed to it, but I really wasn't. I did fix that $6,000 problem in North Jersey, and I really had nothing. I had a couple legal problems around the country, to be honest with you. Like I had moved to Mississippi at one time and had left checks behind in a business I ran. It was stuff that I didn't care about because as long as I wasn't having, as long as I didn't have any consequences, I kept moving. As right. far as my gambling, I made what was somewhat of a significant life, even though I had legal problems behind me. But like what you said, Craig, there's so many things I could have done that I did not do because of my legal problems. Like what gambling had cost me, I feel like I could have done so much more with my life, and that, you know, it was definitely a gigantic detriment to me, all to keep gambling. That was that's what you have to remember. In the end, my decision, like, to get better and find it was all about whether I can keep gambling or not. That's how strong the addiction is.
What was the kind of that last moment for you? What was the bottom of the barrel moment? Was it a bad loss? Was it legal trouble? What happened to you that eventually, after all those years of gambling and lying and hiding, you know, who you really were, what drove you ultimately to get the help that you needed?
And this one is really easy for me. The question is asked of a lot of gamblers, what's your low moment? When have you hit bottom? You know, and many gamblers can't tell you that. You think they'd hit bottom, but they hadn't. Getting arrested or something would have been it. Losing a loved one who won't talk to you or something would have been it. But for me, 2 years ago, May 27th, I memorialized the date. I have all sorts of reasons for it. I was living in South Jersey with a girlfriend who I had reconnected with from high school. Had built myself a pretty good life. She's an executive in Atlantic City and a wonderful person. And I had literally gotten the same thing, another good reputation. I was doing some work. I'm a landscape designer. I was doing some contract work, but I really wasn't working steady. But I didn't want, my pride wouldn't let her know. I was lying to her once again. I started gambling. I was hiding it from her, all sorts of incredible ways I was doing it. Home Depot, I would get gift cards from there and load FanDuel, and that's another whole funny, it's not a funny story, but when I look back, it's incredible how I would fund my gambling. We gamblers find ways to do it.
Yep.
But cutting the story short, she discovered my gambling through, and more importantly, my lying, and she had me removed from my house. It sounds harsh, but in her world, it was the best thing she could possibly have done. And for me, it was the best thing she could possibly have done. And I woke up 9 o'clock in the night, and two policemen were standing next to my bed and literally escorted me out of my home. And never to see my home again, by the way, never my cats and my bed and all the luxuries. I think people need to understand that trying to take yourself out of your comfort zone that you were in for 13 years, and now you're living literally on the street. And if you remember, I told you I used to put everything in my girlfriend or my wife's name right. at the time. So no money was in my name. I was literally on the street with 50 cents in my pocket. Wow. And I'm like, uh-oh. And literally even then I'm thinking, uh-oh, all right, let me get a hold of this. My first thought was, let me get $60 off what I have left on my credit card, and I can go down to Atlantic City and make enough money to get a hotel room. That's how sick I was. And instead, I called one of my friends who stood by me all these years, my friend Rich. He came down, got me a hotel room, said, okay, here, this is as much as I can help you right now. But getting the most important part of the story is a couple days later, I was in one of these flea bag hotel rooms outside Atlantic City, and this is like how the story shouldn't end. I'm glad it didn't end that day. But I took an enormous amount of pills. I was prescribed pain pills, Ambien and Xanax, so I call myself a suburban drug addict because I had prescriptions for all these things.
Right.
And this one night I decided to take them all, 65 of the pain pills, and I don't mind talking about the number because it's very important to me. I took 25 Ambiens and 20 Xanax, and it would have killed the average person.
Right.
But it didn't kill me. I woke up in the morning, vomited a couple of times, blue, which is the color of the pills, and I had done some hacking on my arms. I looked like, obviously, I was trying to hurt myself. My friend once again stepped in. He called me. It was 10 o'clock in the morning. I said to him I had to get to sleep because it was 10 o'clock. He knew it was 10 in the morning. He rushed down. He took me out of that hotel, put me in one more hotel. He didn't really know what I had hurt myself at all, but he told me I had 10 days to straighten my life out, and that's it. He wasn't going to help me anymore if I wasn't going to help myself. And on the seventh day, I called the recovery center just out of the blue, John Brooks Recovery Center in Atlantic City. and a man named Ken Litwack answered the phone, who Dan knows very well.
Good friend,
and
yep.
He answered the phone, which is funny because he never answered the phone, and he answered the phone today. He's a very prominent gambling therapist, and right from that day, I call it the worst day of my life and the best day of my life, because it was by far the worst. Couldn't get any worse than that. I barely lived, but I was free of gambling from that point on for many reasons. I was just done. It didn't mean anymore, and now I was getting help. So that was the seminal moment in my life, for sure.
Wow.
And that was two years ago.
Wow. Was it a impulse thing that I don't want to wake up tomorrow, or is it something you had given a lot of thought to?
I had not given a lot of thought to it. I was never the guy who was going to hurt himself, never. Right. But I started taking the pills, and I'm lonely. I'm trying to... You know, gamblers always are as good as what their options are. And I had no options. I had one friend who was helping me. My girlfriend, who had control of my phone, turned my phone off. So now I was cut off from the world. And by the way, none of this stuff that my girlfriend did, I blame her at all. I think she was trying to protect herself.
Sure.
She, in her mind, she woke up one day and realized she's living with a monster, a guy who was lying to her about everything, money-wise and going to work and not going to work. She was horrified by who I was.
Right. Now, she had every reason to run to the hills, no doubt about it. She did nothing wrong with this. Yeah.
Absolutely. And no, simple answer is no. I never thought I was going to hurt myself, but I think it became a took two, took four, took six, took a whole handful. And I literally had flashbacks for months afterwards where I would remember parts of that night, and it was terrifying. What I had done to my arms, I still carry the scars on my arms today, and I kind of wear them with some, not pride, but they remind me every day of where I was and what happened to me. It was a convolution of people that saved my life, including Ken and my friend Rich and a couple other people who said that I was worth living. And it really was not. Gambling has a very high suicide rate amongst addicted people. I got lucky, and I really say that. Because a lot of people say, well, you probably would have been better off. But where my life has gone since then, I use the term constantly, lucky me, because so many incredible good things have happened to me since then. I have nothing to complain about.
Rich, whomever he is a living saint. There's no doubt about that. And you're blessed to have him in your life. I want to talk about the good stuff now, if we can. I don't want to gloss over, you know, the life experiences. It's worthy of, you know, doing much more time with you. But explain to people 2 years later how amazing life is. As you said earlier, being one of the most honest people on the planet that you can be, at least. How great is life now? And could you have ever envisioned, you know, over the 30-plus years that you were in it, gambling, that you could have the life that you currently have?
What it is freedom. I'm free from lying, which is the most important thing you can ever imagine. Lying consumed me. It was who I was, and I hated it, because who I was good enough. I felt like I had to be something different just to try to keep my perception of me up. Where I want to go with the good part of my life is in that two-year period, most important people for sure were my friend Rich and Ken. Ken, basically, I ended up living in a sober living house. It sounds horrible, but another guy, Rudy, who helped me, I literally had no options. Ken and Rudy got me in living in a sober living house. Now, at this point, I'm a 50-year-old man who had come from a $500,000 house and money in the bank and everything to living with three other men in a small bedroom hotel housing place where that was my life. From there, I started going to a program where they had meetings, and I started understanding that I was contributing at these meetings and people were listening to me when they should, because I had the experience. And I started taking peer recovery classes through them and through Ken. Ken pushed me to do it because he saw something in me. And I started taking the classes. Long story short, I put all my hours in, a lot of hours, became a certified peer recovery coach in New Jersey. And I was doing good work because I was now helping with these sober living houses. I was helping manage them and stuff. And last December, I knew I was doing good. I really felt good about myself physically and everything. And Ken called me and offered me a job at what's called Algamist Recovery in here in Goodyear. And he thought that he had a position was perfect for me. And I was like, for me, it's a dream. I'm going from being a patient of his and barely being alive through gambling to going to one of the meccas of helping people. And now I came here in January. I've been working here for 5 months, and I'm a peer recovery coach. I run groups. I'm the resident manager. I am helping other gamblers every day, and there's nothing else I would like to do with my life. But it's so rewarding that I really can't express it in words. Every day I get to deal with 7 or 8 residents. We have an inpatient thing here, and I watch them graduate from our program in 4 or 6 weeks, and I'm in contact with almost 30 people around the country. My phone goes off every day with fellow gamblers, and you know, we're all the same. What happens when you find out when you put gamblers together is we're all the same. We have different numbers of what we bet, and some people bet on ping pong and cockroach racing, but it doesn't matter. We're all the same.
I graduated from the Algamas program. I spent a few weeks in Prescott or Goodyear, you know, out in Arizona. It was Prescott when I was there. And think very highly of the place. Send people there on a regular basis, because that was the first time I took ownership of having a problem. I needed the people like you who had lived that life and had come to terms with who they were, to help me figure out who I was. So on behalf of the current patients and men and women in recovery there and the future ones, you know, thank you, because having people like you in that program to run those groups and those roundtable conversations and the dinner conversations and the GA meetings at the local VA, all that stuff was life-changing for me. So you should know, if you don't hear it enough, that you are saving lives. And please keep paying it forward and sharing that story, because people need to hear it. And I thank you so much for coming on.
I'm 62 years old now, and I'm living the best life I've lived since I was a kid. And I cherish every day helping people. And I really do. It sounds almost unbelievable. I close all my statements these days with lucky me. And that's something I never thought I would say in my life. Lucky me.
I'll end it at that. I appreciate your time. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening to Hello, My Name is Craig.